England are the biggest bottle jobs in the history of international football. You can't win a tournament with a manager as limited as Southgate. And if I'm wrong, then I'll hold my hands up. And Yaya Toure, the way he carried the ball and smashed it home, that changed the course of the club forever, in my opinion. It was choking at the highest level. Yeah. It was like nothing else.
It must be somewhat satisfying to see the somewhat constant turmoil that Man United are in.
Yes, it's amazing. That's embarrassing for English football.
It's questioning whether Mark's actually a Man United fan.
I think you'd have to be Marlon Brando of Acton. It's ridiculous.
And then it all went wrong. So true Geordie.
I would gladly blow myself up.
He made a joke.
It was embarrassing. Almost left the room. It was dramatic in that sense because obviously it blew up on Twitter and it was really poor.
Do you have any guilt around the move that you made at the time?
No. One day you have a job, next minute you don't have a job.
Was he annoyed that you guys...
No. Shows come and go. That's just the way, that's the way the world works.
You don't have contact with him now? Okay.
Never.
On the show today, I have football YouTuber Boovy. We talk about the downfall of True Geordie, why he left the kickoff, and whether or not Man City will be a bigger club than Man United. This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. More about them later, but just wanted to quickly let you know right now that you can get a massive discount by using the link in the description down below. So Boovy, you get to talk about football for a living, having not played at the highest level or managed or anything like that. That's insane and amazing. Are you sort of waking up pinching yourself every day thinking, do I really get to do this?
It's a weird one because obviously everyone's got a football opinion. And I've been in an industry for what, close to 8 years now.
That long.
So when you work that long in an industry, even though I've never played football at the highest level, I feel that you kind of build a kind of weight to what you do. And obviously I kind of wind people up and I'm a little bit explosive on Twitter sometimes. But I think if you work in an industry that long and commit to football that long, I think sometimes you don't always need to be a footballer to have an opinion. Sometimes that's a better thing, in my opinion.
Yeah. But it's mad. I mean, you're sort of living every guy's fantasy that just talks about football in a pub. Do you know what I mean? Like, could I actually make a living at this?
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? It's a new industry.
Yeah.
And it's a strange industry for sure in terms of, you know, you're trying to get views on certain videos and people sometimes can't gauge if you're trying to say something in the footballing world that is just get clicks or it's your genuine opinion. But yes, it's an amazing industry to be part of.
You mentioned around being a wind-up. I get the impression that's kind of your personality naturally. But obviously it's worked for you as well. Is that just something that came out or you thought, I can lean into this. This is going to play well.
Yeah, it's always been a bit of my personality. I think it's more interesting. Like, there are people out there that create, you know, amazing YouTube videos analysing football. You have these journalists that have, you know, people like Gillian Balague that I've followed for years that have an insight. Henry Winter have an insight. I think my approach would be, again, you know, you said I've never been a professional footballer. Why not have an angle on it? You know, we're watching multimillionaires kick a ball around. Yeah. Fans are fickle. They get annoyed easily. I think you can lean into that and try and be entertaining at least.
Yeah, and I think people can relate because everyone's got that friend that, or they are themselves, that's going to wind them up about this, that and everything. And obviously it just fits perfectly. You're a City fan. So, I mean, how did you get into this in the first place? Were you involved in content creation before you started getting involved in like football media? How did that work?
Yeah, so I worked for a big football website as a video producer, basically. So right, I was lucky enough to be sort of filming interviews with big footballers and working with other presenters and content creators. And I think one of these things, if you ever want to be on front of camera, sometimes osmosis is an important thing. And I never forced my way into the world of being on camera. Mm. Someone sort of offered me a ticket for a City-Chelsea game in Conte's Premier League winning campaign.
Yeah,
I filmed a few bits for just a video, just for this kind of rough idea that we had to kind of vlog at football matches.
As part of the site?
Yeah, part of the site. And we lost 3-1, got absolutely smashed. I don't know if you remember, Diego Costa bullied Otamendi, Willian scored, De Bruyne missed an open net. It was in Guardiola's first season. Obviously, it was a kind of campaign where everyone thought City were going to win the Premier League in the first Guardiola year.
It
never happened. We got battered in loads of games. And I'm just there reacting to it in my honest way. And it kind of blew up a little bit. So that kind of brought me into the space a little bit as opposed to forcing my way into just doing videos for the sake of doing them.
Yeah, so you started out behind the camera. That's interesting. And then managed it that way. So you start doing stuff in front of camera then for this. What was the site that you were working on?
90min.com.
Right, okay.
Yep.
And how long were you doing that before you then went, you know what, I'm going to go out and do this independently?
About 3 or 4 years, yeah.
It's a long time.
So I think that's important because being behind camera, you can obviously understand how to use use cameras literally, obviously, the editing process, what happens on social media. I was involved with Snapchat early. I was involved with Facebook. I know you do a bit of that yourself, of course. And then early Instagram, stuff like IGTV. People forget, you know, IGTV was a separate app that Instagram had for video. We were doing some of their first ever videos, massive brands, but in the football world. And so very, very lucky in that regard to kind of work on all these platforms very, very early. Snapchat in particular, some of the views we were getting on Snapchat back in the day, ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
And then were there the independent channels, or was it more like these sites with a number of different... I'm just thinking of like now the scene is full of your Mark Goldbridges, right? Where you have like a personality around a channel. I imagine that probably wasn't quite the case back then. It's become that way since.
They always exist. I mean, AFTV, I've known Robbie for many, many years, and they were smaller in terms of what, you know, the numbers they were getting. You know, I worked with Troops when he was ranting about Arsenal losing 10-2 to Bayern Munich. That's in 2016. I was working with him then, and he's blown up and done incredibly well. Had time in America doing his thing over there and kind of representing whatever this scene is, representing that in America. It was incredible. It was always there. Mark Goldbridge has been around for many, many years. I think people underestimate.
7-8 years, I think, something like that.
I think it's probably pushing 9 or 10.
Right,
And some of the Man United channels are absolutely huge, and the original Chelsea and Man City fan channels, some of them aren't going now. But the origins of the space is very, very, you know, early, sort of 10 years ago now.
And then you make the decision to go independent. Was that the next move? You decided, I'm going to start my own channel. What was like the thought process making that switch?
Yeah, so the club came along and we were lucky to form it. And that gave me an opportunity to kind of delve into it full time just sort of focus on the kind of football side of things. But the club was kind of the big gateway for me to have a bit of my own thing.
I'm just going to pause for a second because I'm very proud to announce that this show has its first sponsor, and it's a good one. It's NordVPN. As the owner of a marketing agency that operates online, it's really important for me and my team to stay protected with whatever we're doing online. And that's why NordVPN is essential to the operation of my business. Now, if you're a massive football fan like me, you can't watch every game because of the ridiculous 3 p.m. blackout, but you can if you use NordVPN. You can change your virtual location to another country where that game is actually being played. You can also watch games when you're abroad. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN, so no buffering, lagging, slowing your internet down. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Ben Heath. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on a 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the description below. Go ahead and check it out.
I've watched quite a lot of content. I've watched what the club does. I think you guys do great stuff. Why are you a Man City fan?
So my mum's side of the family are Man City fans and lived in the West Country, moved to the West Country early. So I've been supporting City my whole life. And it's a question. The more success City get, it's a double-edged sword because it looks all City fans now look more plastic. I do understand that. It's obviously difficult not living in Manchester. I've lived in London for 10 years for for career reasons, for personal reasons. So the more success City get, it's harder and harder to kind of tell people. When I was watching Sean Wright Phillips and Nicholas Anelka and Antoine Siberski up front, it looks a little bit difficult to kind of explain that story. But ultimately, you cannot do what we do being a fake fan. No way. And you can sit there and you can say my opinions are rubbish, they're limited, you don't agree with them, that's fair enough. But if you put yourself on camera and you're not an actual fan of the clubs that you support, you can debate the legitimacy. Obviously, there's some City fans that have grown up 5 minutes away from Main Road. That's justified. I never did that. And I'm always honest about that. But you can't do the amount of video. I've done thousands and thousands of videos talking about Man City and or other Premier League clubs. If you're a pure actor and you're not, If I'm not an actual Man City fan, I think I'd be embarrassing. And other fans get it as well. So maybe Mark Goldbridge is the big example.
We had Gabby Wanlahore in here last week, and he was questioning whether Mark's actually a Man United fan.
I think you'd have to be Marlon Brando of acting. You'd have to be Marlon Brando
to be able to pull that off.
Of course, it's ridiculous. Now, some people lean into it a little bit more. Maybe they liked Man United, and now they're suddenly a mega fan.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't think that's necessarily true for anyone I've worked with at the highest level in terms of this industry. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think sometimes the authenticity of Man City fans, it can be questioned, certainly the more successful we get.
Yeah, yeah. you have to pull out some photos of you when you were in a Man City kit pre 2008.
I'm trying not to. I try and save it every year. So I don't like people that do that, really.
Okay.
To prove yourself.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. Do you think you'd have been able to do what you've done in the space if Man City hadn't been successful over the past 10 years or so?
It's hard. It's a really good question, because I've had mates that have said, a lot of your career is based on City doing well. Mm. You've had footballing experiences because almost the turn of the dice, because if Sheikh Mansour buys a different club, which is obviously feasible, that could have happened. If Aguero chooses Chelsea over Man City, so many things happen. But
yeah.
It's a weird thing. City's a hard club to gauge, because if you ask a Man United fan, you know, if could we give you £1 billion to invest in an incredible amount of players, and Mbappe comes in and someone like that, Man United fans would lap that up, right? But there's a weird relationship with City where the success is obviously incredible, and it's emotional. It's an amazing thing. I was lucky enough to see City win a Champions League in Istanbul. That's incredible. Yeah. But also Man City have this, the culture of the fan base is sometimes the worst times were the best times, if that makes sense. Sometimes the lesser times for Man City were the more fun and interesting times.
Okay.
And I don't think necessarily City fans identify with trying to be the biggest club in the world, trying to be the most followed club on Instagram. The club's trying to do that itself, but I don't think the fans necessarily engage with that.
I guess a lot of the fans grew up with that underdog story and that being the mentality. So
yeah, exactly.
That switching being quite difficult.
Yeah, 100%.
Favourite Man City memory?
I always go back to the FA Cup semi-final. It was 2011 against Man United. We were talking off camera about how the Champions League this season felt like the final was the quarterfinal with Real Madrid, Man City. Maybe the semi-final, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't feel like the final. Dortmund versus Real Madrid is the actual final in terms of the two best sides. Mm. And in the FA Cup that season, on a smaller level, you know, Man City got to the final, our first final in decades, against Stoke City. You know, Tony Pulis's Stoke City. But the semi-final against Man United was huge for the club. It was the first moment where I think Man City felt like a real contender. Okay. And it took that leap. And Yaya Toure, the way he carried the ball, he ran past Rio Ferdinand and smashed it home. That changed the course of the club forever, in my opinion.
So it wasn't that Aguero goal. Because I imagine for a lot of people, a lot of Man City fans,
yeah,
it is that Aguero goal that's their favourite.
For me, it's always the first memory. So I think, you know...
Yeah, you're on the way up at that
point. The FA Cup came before Sergio Aguero even joined the club. Obviously, the QPR moment was incredible. That season, 6-1. That season, Newcastle away was incredible. Yaya Toure scored an unbelievable goal from 30 yards out. The 1-0 win against Man United at the Etihad was unbelievable as well. But at Wembley, to do that to Sir Alex Ferguson, obviously Balotelli had a bit of a row with Rio Ferdinand at the end of the game as well, and it really turned the table. I don't think the Aguero moment happens the following season.
Had you not been through that.
And put doubt in their minds.
Yeah. I mean, that's tying into what you said about the underdog. That was probably a moment where that started to change, and obviously massively changed since then. Going to that Aguero goal, can you remember it. Can you remember like where you were and all the details around it when that happened?
Yeah, I was in my family house. Basically, I was watching both screens. So Paul Merson was covering on Soccer Saturday. Mm. I'm obviously watching the actual game as well. He made a comment where he said, it's the worst performance I've ever seen from a title winning side or something like that. We were so bad. Couldn't string two passes together. Like it was choking at the highest level. Yeah. It was choking in terms of being 2-1 down. Gibril Cissé, I think it was Mackie scored the other one as well. Being 2-1 down, it was embarrassing. The second half, almost left the room.
Really?
I almost left the room. And then you hear that you hear the noise from the Dzeko goal. Obviously, I'm watching it on TV, so I can't recreate what actually happened in the stadium. But when Aguero hits that ball, it was like nothing else. It was like nothing else. It was crazy.
With an amazing bit of commentary to go with it as well.
Oh, it was surreal. It is the best moment in Premier League history. And no one will talk to me about Leicester City. No one can talk to me about the 99 Man United side or the Invincibles. They don't have those moments in the Premier League. They really don't.
The most exciting end of the season. I've got I'll tell it quickly, a bit of a crazy story. I missed that live because I missed those 5 minutes. We were watching the game. I was at my parents' house. We were watching the game and there was this helicopter going really close to our house for a good 20 minutes or so. And, you know, we're sort of looking out the window going, what on earth's going on over there? Anyway, my dad's getting really stressed. He's a United fan. So he's getting really stressed thinking, oh, you know, it could go bad at any moment. And I'm saying, it's not going to happen now. You're fine. Anyway, this helicopter's going. My mum shouts, there's a man in the garden from the kitchen.
Mm.
We're in the living room. I sort of, what?
So I go into the kitchen, and there's this bloke that's hopped over the fence from the neighbor's garden, and he's run to the end of the garden and hopped a fence into, that was like a pub garden, there was a pub the other side. The dog, Springer Spaniel, nice weather, May, right? He's chasing after the guy thinking, this is amazing. And then so my mum's shouting, there's a man in the garden. Oh, Monty's gone after him. And I'm there like, right. So I get my shoes on, quick, go out, got to get this dog back. Who knows who this bloke is? Anyway, by the time I get out there, the guy's gone. It turns out, we found out the next day that a guy had escaped. There was a, I can't remember the name of it now, but there was a like a psychiatric prison nearby, and he literally escaped, and he was hiding in our neighbor's garden in the bushes.
Oh my God.
That's why that helicopter was like literally right by our house for 20 minutes. And he hopped into our garden and legs it, and they caught him the next day. But that was literally that moment, that Aguero
that
moment.
Crazy.
So I come back in, and my dad's like, you know, he's like morose.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just seeing replays on the TV of that Aguero goal. So, yeah.
Was it actually a guy from the ward?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like an episode from Midsummer Murders.
I can't remember what it was called. Yeah, we found
That's
out he was
crazy.
Because like, where we lived, we was like a little village, and there was the house next door, and then the other side of them was just like woods. So he was hiding in the patch of woodland. Yeah. Then he got into their garden. Then he came into our garden, and our dog's chasing him. So I missed that goal.
That's like, crazy.
And I came back and couldn't believe it.
Was he sectioned?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like a psychiatric prison.
Well, I hope he's all right now. Yeah. Yeah. He missed the Aguero goal too.
He did. And the poor bloke flying a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That was a bit of a crazy one. I want to ask about some Man City players. So most underrated Man City player, let's say in the Premier League era.
Oh, that's a hard one. I think Tevez is underrated. Yeah, I think Tevez's total technical ability is maybe better than Aguero's. I think he carried the club in a way. Aguero's a better finisher, and Tevez's kind of issues with work rate at points. Obviously, came back overweight, had an issue with Bayern Munich when he didn't want to get substituted on. I don't know if that's the case. It was hard to gauge between him and Mancini's story about that. But in terms of total technical ability, scoring free kicks by himself, running through opposition defenders, he's right up there for me, and people don't put him in the list of the Suarez's of the world, and he's not top five, but I think there's a discussion in terms of pure technical ability, maybe not legacy or narrative. Andy Cole's got so many league titles and so many goals. In terms of technical ability, he's a better total player than someone like Andy Cole, in my opinion. Maybe not a ruthless finisher in the same way, but Carlos Tevez, he was the first major signing that changed the club. Really, obviously, there's a few here and there, but Tevez is right up there, and he was world class when he came to City. There's no doubt about that.
And it also showed the power of the club to be able to get someone. He obviously had his history at United. Do you know what I mean? That was such a big, that was like a signature deal, wasn't
amazing.
It? To see that one. On the flip side of it, most overrated City player.
Overrated. That is very hard. My issue is, and this might sound like a bit of a wind up, I think a lot of City players are really underrated because, you know, I'll do podcasts with Man United fans, with Chelsea fans, Arsenal fans, because they don't rate City success, whether it's because it's not deserved, whether it's because we're beating the likes of Man United to winning these league titles or Chelsea or whatever. I think City, because there's a, you know, for example, if me and you debating an Arsenal player, I can get 10,000 guys on Twitter to retweet my tweet, backing up Arsenal.
Got it.
And City don't have the same mentality on Twitter. They don't have the same numbers in the same way. Yeah. City fans always back City players, of course. But I think there's a massive narrative around a lot of City players. For example, De Bruyne. You know, you talk to certain players that I do, people that I do podcasts with. De Bruyne doesn't even get recognised in the same breath as Patrick Vieira, as Frank Lampard. He's better than all of those players. He's better than all those players. So it's hard. Overrated is a hard one. It's hard. Is there anyone that springs to your mind?
You might not like this. Yaya Toure comes to mind.
Overrated.
Yeah, not because he wasn't fantastic, because he was, but just you hear some people talk about him as though he might have been the best in his position in the Premier League era, and I don't think he was quite that good.
His peak season, he was.
Right, okay.
But his peak season was 13, 14, scored 20 goals, unbelievable. His peak, he could do more than Frank Lampard ever could. Now, Frank Lampard's legacy is longer. Chelsea fans will talk about the goals he scored against Barcelona, for example, and his unbelievable technical ability. Lampard couldn't control a game of football like Yaya Toure. There's no way you could put Lampard as a centre-back in a Champions League winning campaign like Barcelona did in 2009. So, and he couldn't score a goal. He didn't have the power. He didn't drive with the ball in the same way.
Yeah.
So his peak wasn't the same. He didn't have the length that Paul Scholes had. More technical ability. Far more,
okay,
in my opinion.
Okay. Another one that comes to mind when I think overrated with City is probably Vincent Kompany. Which again, you might not like.
I know it sounds ridiculous. That is the one I understand more. Okay. I think Yaya Toure goes into Man United's midfield, prime Yaya Toure.
Right.
And he gives them an extra few league titles. Mm. I think it's hard to gauge Kompany. Kompany was such a City icon. Yeah. It's a bit like when, let's say you took, even though he's far better than Jamie Carragher or Gary Neville, for example, you take them out of the club. You don't quite know if they translate to Real Madrid, to Chelsea. You don't know. Steven Gerrard, when he left, no, he left to Chelsea. You don't know if he translates. I'm sure he would have. Kompany, I do get that a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Again, not that he's not an amazing player. It's just in comparison to how he's often seen. Your favourite City player?
It's always Sean McPhillips. Yeah.
From the underdog days.
Yeah, 100%, because he plays football the right way. Well, he used to, obviously. He used to carry the ball individually, he had pace, he worked hard for the team. I think City fans love the kind of connection to Ian Wright and City, and that was kind of a nice little touch as well. But some of the goals he used to score, and he used to score goals from he'd play on the right wing and he'd score near post, he'd smash it so hard, he'd score so many chances near post. His long range finish in Sean McPhillips, completely underrated. When he left for Chelsea, that was the one every football fan's got heartbreak when they see one of their players leave for a club. Leroy Sané is another example for City fans. But Sean Wright-Phillips, when he left for Chelsea and he was kind of put on the bench, it was heartbreaking.
Mm. Sané was painful when he left?
Sané was similar to Sean Wright-Phillips to me, because a lot of City fans are taken back now. He's gone to Bayern Munich. He hasn't improved, in my honest opinion. Yeah. He's been successful. Can't deny his success. He's plateaued, I think. He's at the same level. But I think at City, he was better at City. The goal he scored against Liverpool in 2019, out of this world.
Who do you think City's best ever player?
I think City's best total player in terms of legend, in terms of importance, it's probably Sergio Aguero. It probably has to be, in terms of, you know, he's the highest scorer at the club. He has the biggest moments. The first league title's huge. Obviously, he didn't play in the FA Cup final for our first win in the FA Cup for three or four decades. But the league title win against Man United, unbelievable, and he scored so many big goals. The issue will be when we do, you know, football podcasts or whatever, is the lack of the Champions League and maybe, you know, his performance or a lack of it, because he only had 5 or 10 minutes against Tuchel's Chelsea. That'll be an issue, but I think it has to be Sergio Aguero.
You'd have him over De Bruyne or Rodri.
Rodri could get there.
Yeah, give him more time.
But you always remember your first. I think Rodri could win 4 Champions Leagues with City if he does. Let's say he does. I still think a lot of City fans would say Aguero because the importance. You have to have your first one somewhere. That's why Chelsea fans love John Terry and Lampard and Cantona at Man United, you know, Steve Bruce at Man United as well.
Those waves of players.
Yeah.
As a City fan, it must be somewhat satisfying to see the somewhat constant turmoil that Man United are in.
Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing. But I think the issue is the Premier League needs Man United to be strong.
Yeah.
It does. And obviously, I don't want Man United to ever win a league title as long as I'm alive on some level. But you want them to come second every now and then. Okay. It's like when Rangers got relegated out of the Scottish Premier League. It's like Celtic need Rangers as much as Rangers need to be in the Premier League. And Man United need to be, you know, Man United have won 3 European titles. We're talking about some of the best players to ever play the game. Bobby Charlton, George Best. They go to the Cantonars, the Beckhams. They're getting smashed in the Champions League group stages. They can't even make it out. That's embarrassing for English football. It is embarrassing.
Are you surprised that United fans seem to want to keep Ten Hag, or at least a lot of them do? Because that baffles me.
Yeah, I think it's Stockholm syndrome. I really do. I think
it's that bad.
Yeah, I think you get used to the trauma. I think you kind of just want familiarity. Okay. He's absolutely shocking. And the issue is, Man United fans obviously preach to City fans about where the success comes from, if City are entitled to have financial investment to be successful as Man United. That's a debate. But if you preach that kind of grandiosity about how big Man United are as a club, you can't sit there and have players that are bang average and you back them relentlessly. Now, obviously, as a fan in the stadium, you have to back whoever's playing for your club, of course. But the kind of narrative around Ten Hag as if he can take the club forward. Absolutely crazy. He's way out of his depth. Doesn't look like a Man United manager. He looks small in the role.
Yeah.
He looks small in the role. It's a matter of time before he goes, in my opinion. If he stays another season, it backlogs the issue another couple of years. You have to fire quick in football, in my opinion, when it's really this bad.
I think he'll probably go. One of the bizarre things I've heard from quite a lot of United fans is that it's not him, it's the players. And then you look at recent performances and you go through the player list and you go, most of those are his players. So surely there has to be responsibility there.
4-0 to Palace. With some of these players, come on.
Yeah.
You know, Mateta looked like prime Adriano. Seriously, it was embarrassing. There's no world. Roy Hodgson would have got a result out of with that Man United side.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Or Sam Allardyce. And we say Sam Allardyce as a joke. He had limited resources at his time as a manager. And he used to get the best out of limited players. We have to accept that Man United have got limited players. Even the players they brought in. Onana's a limited keeper. He's not a world-class keeper. He never will be. They've got Højlund up front. He's got potential. Garnacho's got potential. Kobbie Mainoo's getting run into the ground. You've got Christian Eriksen who doesn't want to be there. But they still shouldn't be getting smashed 4-0.
Casemiro, I think he'd be slow down my six-a-side league at the moment.
Honestly.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Happened to his legs. Do you think City will be the biggest club in the Premier League at some point in the future?
No.
Okay.
No.
Why not?
Because, well, firstly, City fans don't want that. If you had a Man United fan sat here right now, they'd go on about shirt sales, they'd go on about Netflix documentaries, they'd go on about David Beckham, or they'd go on about their great legends. That's a different debate. City fans don't care about the size of the club in the same way. They want to see, obviously, you know, we want to see success on the pitch. You want to see a loyalty to the shirt. You want to see beautiful football. If the money's coming in, you obviously want to, as a City fan, want to see beautiful footballers play, you know, beautiful stuff, of course. But City have no interest being the biggest club in the world from a fan perspective, in my opinion. So, and the issue is you can't rewrite history. You can't, what George Best did alone, winning the European Cup with Man United, that alone probably trumps what we did in Istanbul in terms of how early it was in football. You know, to do that with black and white TV almost, that is football heritage that City will never have. City have an underrated football heritage. We've won double the amount of league titles before the takeover of Chelsea, won our first trophy before Chelsea founded one of the oldest clubs in the Football League, Man City. But there's no City fan out there who wants the biggest revenue or the most shirt sales in China, with all due respect. No City fan really cares.
City apparently have the biggest revenue in the Premier League now, don't they?
Yeah, but that for me gets underrated as well in terms of, that is legitimate. A lot of that is legitimate because if you win league titles, if you win Champions Leagues, the TV revenue is absolutely huge. It's absolutely huge these days. Now, we can debate the foundations of City's success if it's legit. Should a club who were in dire straits with the previous chairman, should City get an owner to come in with the amount of money and straight away sign Rabinho? That's a debate. We can have that debate. But in terms of being the biggest club in England, I don't think that will ever happen.
It's interesting because I was thinking about this the other day. As I said, I play six-side football, and you look at, we're in the West Country, so there's no big Premier League clubs here, right? So most people here support one of the big teams that aren't local. And all the people I'm playing with, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, not many City fans, but their kids, so many of their kids are City fans.
Really? Yes, interesting.
Because they're 8, 9, 12. That's the most successful club that they've known. Supporting football. And because there's no big Premier League club nearby, I do wonder, okay, they're probably going to be City fans for the rest of their life now. And you do that another 20 years, another 30 years, I do wonder if City might end up, you know, being bigger than Man United one day, which sounds crazy.
Maybe more successful.
30 years
time. Does a World City end up in, let's say we're doing this podcast in 2050, you invite me back on for round 2, right?
You're not coming back till then, bloody hell. No, exactly.
But you know, there's a world, if the Premier League is still in its current format, we don't know, with the Super League. Let's just say the Premier League exists for another 25 years. There's a world City end up with 15 Premier League titles and 4 Champions Leagues.
Yeah.
We're only 2 away from Man United's European record.
Yeah.
Man United have got 3 European trophies. And they've bottled quite a few finals with Ferguson as well. Let's be completely real. So City could be more successful. That's a big difference in terms of size.
But I imagine, I see size as probably like a lag that follows from the success. It might take 20, 30 years because people become fans of a club and then they tell their kids, no, you are going to support City. You know, they do all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But interesting. We will see. You mentioned the Super League. Everyone was super against that at the time. Would you say you share that opinion? Don't want it? Don't want any variation of it?
Yeah, no. We did a lot of podcasts and videos around it on various channels that I was working on back in the day. And some of the numbers we did on those videos were the biggest I've ever done in my career. Mm. And that's after City losing Champions League finals to Chelsea. That's after City, you know, losing certain big games or losing to Man United here and there or whatever, Arsenal. That was by far some of the biggest content I've ever done because it resonates. Because my opinion is the Super League is a disgrace to football.
Okay.
It is to the detriment of everything we know in this country about the football pyramid and what the football pyramid means to the likes of Man City, to the likes of Man United. It's an absolute disgrace that, and it's unfortunate as a City fan that I saw articles on the website suggesting that, you know, City were going to join the Super League. And that changed very, very quickly. It changed within a day.
Was City the first of the English clubs to pull out?
I think so. Chelsea were very close behind I think. And but it was embarrassing. Mm. It was embarrassing. Ripping up the fabric of football in this country, it was really poor.
Okay. Financial fair play has come under quite a lot of criticism recently. A lot of people saying that it helps protect the big clubs who are already in situ. What would you do with financial fair play? Leave it, make adjustments, get rid of it altogether?
I think there has to be an overarching system where clubs like Bury don't get out of business. Clubs like Portsmouth don't get run into the ground. There's so many big clubs, Sunderland, for example. There are so many clubs that are being run into the ground because of financial mismanagement. There has to be an understanding, though, that clubs come in and there should be a level of competition where if the money is clear and obviously fair to spend, then it's hard for me to gauge why Nottingham Forest aren't allowed to spend money. Mm. And the likes of Chelsea, will they get punished and they spend almost an equivalent, but to a higher level, if that makes sense, for the amount of money that they've got coming in. It does feel like the big clubs are being protected by these rules, and that's an issue.
Yeah. I would like to see money being ring-fenced within clubs so they don't go bankrupt. So you're saying you can't rack up big debts within a club. This has to be financed by the owners and they have to put in the cash to protect against that. And other than that, if it was up to me, I would just no restrictions. Just let the chaos begin. I think that would be very exciting. I think we might get the best of both worlds there.
Mm, it's hard though, because you say let the chaos begin, and I get what you're saying. But so many clubs have been run into the ground in this country. And I think, look, Bury Football Club is a weird example because obviously not a Premier League club. No one really knows about the situation there. But they're one of the oldest clubs in the country. Hmm. And it was, I think it was the first example in England of a club literally, a bit like Rangers, very similar to Rangers, how if you ask a Rangers fan, the Rangers that currently exist is not Rangers 1.0, it's Rangers 2.0. A lot of Rangers fans will have that opinion. It's not quite Rangers. It's a different club now because of how bad it went. So Bury, you know, it's a very small example. They went out of business completely. They don't exist anymore. They got wiped off the history books on some level, and they've now got a brand new club right at the bottom of the football pyramid. It's dangerous if we're seeing that happen.
I think if you ring fence the money, as in like the owners had to put in the cash, so you couldn't rack up debts, I think you might avoid that. And then so I'd have that in there. I would just like the idea of a letting clubs, if they want to spend and compete and get the best players in the Premier League and being able to do that. It's probably more on the other side of things.
Yep.
Obviously, 115 charges. I'm sure you've talked about this a whole bunch. Will it take the shine away from the achievements if City are found guilty on any of that sort of stuff?
Well, it takes the shine off of a Man United's perception of it.
Okay.
And their perception of it isn't very bright because on a sporting level, they've got no answers to why City have outcompeted Man United in the last 10 years in terms of spend, signed better players, had a better, more progressive strategy, started a women's football club first, invested in the stadium quicker than the new Man United owners have done, have been progressive in so many ways of how the clubs run. And you can debate whether that's right or for wrong. Ultimately, the previous owner of Man City nearly run us into the ground. We were a few weeks away from being potentially running out of money and being insolvent. Mm. So they've come in and invested everything. The Etihad complex, I've been lucky enough to work there multiple times, is out of this world.
Is it?
So if you back the idea that football clubs and Man United fans can be there and be a little bit fickle and say, oh, Man City are plastic and we were relegated in the 90s and stuff like that. If you actually love the idea of football, what it means for football, then as a City fan, you don't want a hole in the roof at Old Trafford. Yeah. Now, obviously, it's funny to sing about it and stuff like that, and it's and it's a bit embarrassing on that level. But on some level, you want Man United to have a great stadium and to be a healthy football club. So Man United fans are never going to look at City's success and love it, and nor should they. But if you ask a City fan, it doesn't matter because the sporting merit of what has been achieved is out of this world.
Yeah, and I think far personally, I feel like too much emphasis is put on the money spent, especially when you compare, this has been doing the rounds recently, net spend, City significantly less than Chelsea. And well, it's been during Klopp's era, I think I've seen. There's been significantly less than Chelsea and United. I think Guardiola is the real difference maker. When he goes, it might be a different story, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think there'll be a big hole to fill. But you've got to back the club to get it right.
Okay, so the first time I ever saw you in content was on the kickoff.
Yep.
How did you get on there? How did that come about?
The football media world's very small, so I've probably worked with, at some point, some of the producers that were on it, and James Alcott obviously had a role on the kickoff, and we'd worked together at Ball Street, and it kind of built into the kickoff, and yeah, just through sort of osmosis, I guess, in the community.
So the kickoff seemed, from what I could tell, like kind of a new format when it came to YouTube football. It wasn't a person. It was probably a hybrid between football YouTube and what we more traditionally see on like a Sky Sports type thing.
Yeah.
How long had that been going before you got on it? And was it already a big established thing? Because you became one of the regulars.
Yeah, no, it started in 2018, maybe slightly earlier than that, 17, 18, around that time. And I was on in 2019. So I was in quite early, actually, in one of the older studios, sort of where the setting was. Yeah. It was revolutionary in terms of the execution. The guys that produced it, the guys that shot it, the camera guys, the editors, the presenters, of course, everyone on the table. It was on some level, you know, it was a revolutionary format in this space for how quality it was. The image quality of some of the shots, cameramen with these unbelievable, you know, abilities to get beautiful shots live talking about football. It hadn't been seen before. There were watch-alongs before. It wasn't the very first watch-along ever seen on YouTube.
Yeah.
But the execution of it was crazy.
And the dynamic between you guys on there worked really well. Was getting on there life-changing? Did that make a big difference to your career?
I wouldn't say life-changing in the sense, it was an amazing opportunity. And some of the views we did and some of the kind of, I mean, some of the numbers we were doing for the Champions League final, it was me versus Rory, obviously, for the City Chelsea Champions League final. That it was life changing in a sense to have some of these moments with an audience, with a community. It was a beautiful experience because obviously I love football. You love sharing football, my opinions on it. You know, I talked about the Super League with you. We did a video, did close to a million views on the Super League. Mm. That's important for me. That's important because, again, I've never played football at the highest level. I've been following football all my life. It's in my family. It's all my friends. It's what I've done, again, all my adult life, all my life. Being able to express my opinions to the highest level is very, very, I'm very lucky to do that. So it was massive on that level.
Did it change from a personal brand in terms of your personal fame? Were you getting recognized a lot more, having been on that show for a little while?
Yeah, I think going to City games was harder. Well, not harder in a bad way. It was, you know, you get spotted at a football game. Look, when I grew up.
Busier.
Yeah. but when I grew up, look, when I went to games as a kid, you know, you're always told when you go to games, you hide your scarf until you get in the stadium. You hide your kit until you get in the stadium. The football fan culture, obviously, once you're in the stadium, you say hello to people that you sat next to on the away days as well. But when you get spotted for doing a TikTok that goes viral, doing a YouTube video that goes viral, it does run against kind of the privacy of football fans, if that makes sense. Because when you're going to a stadium and you're kind of getting spotted from a Man United fan going into a Manchester derby, you know, that's where it becomes a little bit, it can feel a little bit
intimidating.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, could you go to a City game now? Or would you just be mobbed?
Not mobbed, no. No, I go to City games every season. It's just weird, but you know, every now and then it's not a huge level. Obviously, you've had footballers on this show. You know, they're real heroes to people. Doing a TikTok about why Man United are rubbish is a whole different world. but even capturing 1% of that, you know, just getting someone come up to you in a footballing context, you always have a little bit in the back of your mind. You know, they're gonna are they going to bottle me for what I said about Man United being embarrassing? You know, you do worry about that, don't you?
Okay,
you
know, yeah. I mean? Away from games, in terms of your like personal brand, just in and about regular life, do you have people coming up to you much and, oh, I watch your content, I know who you are, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I get it a lot now, especially living in, you know, I live in London. So if you get on the tube at, you know, 9 a.m. at Waterloo, you're probably on the tube with 200, 300 people on the Jubilee line. You put, one of them likes football, one of them's got TikTok, and then bang. So yeah, it happens more for sure.
Do you like it?
No, not really. If you go into, obviously, look, I've been, to, you know, you go to a pub with a mate and someone comes over and talks to you about City, the mate thinks that you think it's cool being, you know, obviously 1% famous on something, you know, 1% famous. But no, I don't enjoy it because obviously I think, you know, privacy is important.
Okay.
I enjoy the content we make, and having an independence about doing that and having that as a kind of career is amazingly lucky. Mm. And going to games and meeting footballers, that's the cool side of it. But some random guy, you know, you're never quite sure, are you?
Okay, yeah. So you must have been on the kickoff. You got 2019. You must have been a kickoff then for a good 3 years or so.
Yeah, about three. Yeah, 4 years probably. Yeah,
four years. And then it all went wrong. What was that like? So for people who haven't got any context, so True Geordie, who was the owner of the kickoff, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
And one of the presenters on there as well. He made not. It wasn't during a kickoff stream or anything, was it? But he made a joke.
Yep.
That did not go down well. A lot of people felt like it crossed the line. And that seemingly put a stop to the show overnight. Is that what happened?
Yeah, look, basically, we had an opportunity to start the club. The kickoff obviously had issues in terms of Brian's image. And it's a difficult one to talk about because if I was on the show, then you can react in different ways. And I wasn't part of the show. And obviously, people that were part of that project and that video in particular in the live stream, they answered it in their own ways. So it's hard for me to talk about how they've answered it. And yeah, ultimately, you have to just narrow it down and say, I'm here to, you know, I'm lucky enough to talk about football. I've done it for 8 years. I did it before the kickoff. People think I sort of started on the kickoff. Did it a long time before the kickoff. Mm. I've been doing it since the kickoff. So the kickoff comes, you know, shows come and go. And the only thing to say about the kickoff is it was of the most premium quality.
Yeah.
It was authentic and it looked amazing. And I think it brought football fan culture in a genuine way to the masses that hasn't been seen before. And I think a lot of podcasts and live streams now, and there's a lot of them that are very similar, that aren't the same in terms of the quality, in my opinion. Hopefully the club tries to do it in our own way. And I think we do. But the kickoff was an amazing time for the football industry, and for different reasons, it couldn't exist in its current format now, and that's just the way it goes.
So when that happened, then I seem to remember that the kickoff just stopped. Did you guys just stop recording? But obviously the club comes out of this. We'll get to that in a minute. But were you guys who were on there, and that's obviously part of your regular work? Were you thinking? Were you disappointed? Were you worried that this is not going to come back? I mean, the kickoff has now restarted in a similar but different format with different people. Yeah. But were you thinking, oh, okay, Brian's been cancelled, this is done?
It was dramatic in that sense because obviously it blew up on Twitter and the, obviously the moment itself was...
That must have been stressful.
And obviously you feel bad for people involved as well, of course. I'm lucky, from a personal point of view, I have different opportunities.
Yeah.
And I know I was never 100% in with the kickoff. So it did.
Yeah,
but I can see why it affected a lot of people. And you have to just say, you know, the kickoff's still going. It still looks amazing. The guests and the way they talk about football is still massively engaging. And you can only wish them the best in that regard. But the club came around as an opportunity. And you know, the club is what I do now.
Is what happened with Brian, with True Geordie, is that a cautionary tale to people in your line of work to just go, did everyone take a moment and go, we need to be really careful with what we say here? Because, you know, we don't need to go into like the specifics of what he said, but everyone makes jokes where they don't mean it. And the reaction seemed intense. It seemed like over the top to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the reaction was over the top. I think the reaction was equally as valid, you know, relative to the relative to what he said.
Okay,
it was a valid response, in my opinion. I think he's come out and apologized.
Yeah,
I think that's authentic. You know, I don't know what he thinks about me, but I've got a massive respect for him, a huge amount of respect for him, And it isn't, you know, obviously you can have this bit of a trope. He isn't that kind of person to do that, or he isn't that kind of, he doesn't have those opinions. Obviously he does not have those opinions.
Yeah.
And he's a very, very, you know, nice and nice guy. And I respect him massively.
I think that's why I feel it's over the top, because as I said, everyone said things they don't mean. They say jokes, they overstep the line. And I just think there should be a space for people to be able to be like, look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Mm. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
Which he has now done. And yeah. I know he's back on track and everything like that. But I did just wonder if there were thoughts in people like yours head going, okay, let's just be really careful with what we say. Because
I think that happens anyway. You know, I think even from the first day I was in the industry, front of camera, you have to have a level conscious of respectability about what you're talking about. And
yeah.
But some people, it is just a mistake. Some people make mistakes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And if you're spending that much time in front of camera, you're probably going to say something at some point.
It's hard. Live is hard.
Yeah.
You know, I do live TV every now and then, and that's hard.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Very difficult.
And then people don't understand whether you mean it or whether it's a joke or not, and things along those lines. So the club then, because during that time, kickoff's not going ahead by the looks of things, and I imagine it's all up in the air, and the club was an opportunity for you. Whose idea was that? Because obviously, the club is you, Rory Jennings, Adam McCullough, all three of you were on the kickoff.
Mm.
So you're familiar with that format.
Yep.
And the club has a similar format, obviously, to the kickoff. Whose idea was it and how did that come about?
Yeah, it started from obviously a podcast network called The Fellas, and that was just an idea internally, and we were very lucky in terms of how quickly that was executed. And within a few months, we had a basis of a set, you know, kind of a table, three chairs, and obviously a nice little decor behind. And we were very, very lucky enough that a company like that were able to back us and move quickly with it. Because obviously, like, I've worked in football media, obviously, you know, close to a decade. There are some companies, even if they work online, they're digital media companies, they don't operate quickly. There's a lot of paperwork and there's a lack of commitment to creating a nice set. You know, you've done it with this set, you've committed to having a nice set.
Yeah.
It can be slow in this industry. So we were very lucky for how quickly it all came together.
How has the club been? So how long? Is it 18 months old?
About 18 months, yeah.
Something like that.
Crazy, yeah.
Yeah. How has it performed? Has it been as successful as you hoped it would have been when you first started it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think, look, we're lucky that we support three massive clubs. Chelsea and Man United aren't doing too well. City have obviously had our first European campaign where we were successful. And obviously I was part of all the live streams going into that. You know, that is incredible ammunition. Because obviously the football industry relies on stories.
Yeah.
And you need Arsenal to have a big campaign, or you need Arsenal to fall off massively. You need a narrative or something for Arsenal fans that make videos to have something to talk about. You need something to talk about. And we're lucky that 18 months in, we're seeing the best Arsenal side we've seen in 20 years. Mm. We've seen Man United and Chelsea fall off like we've never seen them fall off in 20 years.
Yeah.
And we're very lucky that we've got, you know, three fans that have relevant stories to talk about.
I guess you almost want the clubs that you support and those narratives, you almost want loads of success or the opposite, right? You probably don't want Man United are third and having a boring
mediocre season
because it's interesting. From the outside, there was criticism of you guys setting up the club, that you had abandoned True Geordie during a difficult time and that you had set up something to compete with the kickoff. Do you have any guilt around the move that you made at the time?
No, shows come and go. Mm. Some shows are bigger than others. And you phase in and out. I was on a show. I started a show on the first company I worked at, 90min.com. That show doesn't exist in the same guise anymore. And I'm not part of it. It's just, I think people like to, especially some of these YouTube documentary makers, they love to create a narrative. They love to create these kind of dramas, like it's an episode of The Kardashians. Ultimately, things come and go in life. That's just the way the world works. One day you have a job, next minute you don't have a job.
Yeah.
It's the economy. It's the waves of life.
Yeah, I own a marketing agency, and if you hire enough people and they do well, it is inevitable that people will leave to start their own thing. It's just, that's part of the situation, especially if the company at the time is struggling, which obviously was happening with the kickoff then. So you feel like a lot of that criticism was unfair, basically. It wasn't...
It's gossip.
Okay.
A lot of it is gossip from people that I've never met. And if you have an actual conversation, if you're interested in engaging in conversation, then I'm happy to have it, like I'm having with you. Yeah. But some of these people, I've never even met them.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe that's the nature of the beast.
They're trying to get views.
Yeah.
What's your relationship with Brian like? Was he annoyed that you guys went to do that?
I can't speak on what he thinks about it. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard.
There wasn't like, you know, he's not shouting at you down the phone or anything along those lines.
No. Never, okay. Never.
But you don't have contact with him now?
No. Obviously, I see what he's doing and massively gas at the kickoff is still going in its guys because it's... And it also, it's important because the kickoff is a historical piece of media in the football world for the way it started, the space, for the way the quality of content that was happening. A strong football media online world in this country, the kickoff has to be part of it, in my opinion. And so does the club, and the club has an equal right to exist. You know, there are other, you know, other shows, SDS, Pitch Side, loads of other channels. There has to be a vibrant community. You can't just have one channel doing well. And the kickoff at some stage was the one channel doing well.
Are you worried about there being lots of competition? You mentioned like Pitch Side, for example, and another example. Are you worried there might be so much competition in the future that the views will all get diluted across various channels and it'll
hurt the club? I guess everyone's worried about that, aren't they? All YouTubers, probably even Mr. Beast probably sees, you know, 50 guys below him that are all doing the same thing, trying to find out how they can make the same video, but slightly more profitable, right, slightly more interesting. I'm sure you've got competition. I think if you're afraid of competition, I mean, we work in football.
Yeah.
You know, football is a competition at the highest level and we're talking about it. You can't sit there expecting a monopoly. It's crazy.
Is it true that you said you would fight True Geordie on a Misfits fight card?
Yeah, I did say that. It was a bit ridiculous, really, because I wouldn't stand a chance.
Okay. You don't think it'd go well?
I wouldn't stand a chance.
No. Why did you say it? Was it a joke?
Just a bit of a wind-up. Yeah, okay. It was a bit stupid.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Lawrence McKenna, who was one of the other big parts of the kickoff, you've probably seen or at least heard of the video he did with Mark Goldbridge where he talked about the end of the kickoff and the fact that he feels like he was the one kind of left out. The three of you went to the club. The kickoff is now under its own guise. Do you have any contact with him still? Any idea why he sort of ended up falling between the cracks, as it were?
I can't speak on his career. You know, I've got massive respect for how he creates the content he creates, for having a massive role in me being on the kickoff a lot. He was supportive and I've got a massive amount of time for Lawrence in all regards. So I can't speak on what he does day to day.
Would you have him on the club?
Of course. It's just a matter of maybe timing and interest. And it's not always easy like that. Sometimes it's hard to get people on things like that, you know, in terms of logistics, and some people go into the game. So yeah, of course.
Okay. Interesting. Sky Sports. You've fairly recently, I believe, started doing some work with Sky Sports. How did that come about?
Again, it's just producers seeing your stuff and online and yeah, getting that opportunity on broadcast TV is amazing.
Yeah, that must have been a really cool phone call to get.
Crazy, man. I think the first one I did was with Robbie and talking about Arsenal, and I sort of predicted the fall off months before it happened. And I was very lucky to sort of get that right, I guess.
Yeah. It's really interesting how Sky and also some of the other more traditional sports medias, the tone and feel of the content they're producing, particularly on social, is very different. It very much seems like they've taken a page out of the YouTuber's book and are copying that style of content. I mean, I was going to say, is that something that concerns you? But given they're going to be hiring people like you, I guess not. But is that surprising to you that they've gone down that route?
Well, I mean, where else do they go? I mean, you know, the audience that are engaging with football getting, on average, younger people get involved, obviously, you know, have social media from an earlier age. I think the interest in the Premier League is moving online. And so they have to be applicable to how they present themselves online more than ever. So it doesn't surprise me.
You felt like it's somewhat inevitable that they had to go.
Of course, yeah.
They had to go down that
route. Of course.
Yeah, okay. Change of tack a little bit. We've got the Euro soon. England prediction, how are we going to do?
Get to the quarters and lose on penalties.
Okay. Think, yeah. You're that confident.
look, I'm confident on the technical ability of England. I think England, I think Germany underrated. I think France will be fantastic. I can't back the manager in terms of how he manages the side. So... You can't win a tournament with a manager as limited as Southgate. And right. if I'm wrong, then I'll hold my hands up.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I hope you are wrong, but...
Yeah, we all do, but... people underestimate the curse of England. Mm. One trophy since 1966.
With all the players and the talent.
Not a Euros.
Yeah.
One final since 1966, which was the Euros final at Wembley, and we lose that. I mean, you talk about Harry Kane's curse taking that to Bayern Munich, and they've been trophyless for the first time since 2012. So, you know, football history matters, and the narrative and the beliefs that people have. You know, England are the biggest bottle jobs in the history of international football, based on the talent that we've had. It's based on seeing Greece be more successful in the last 50 years. Portugal,
yeah.
Rubbish, that Portugal side. Ronaldo was amazing, of course, and Pepe. Rubbish Portugal side that won in 2016. We lost to Iceland.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, we've been through the golden generation of when we were younger. We've clearly got another one now.
Yeah.
Hopefully we do well. We will see. So I asked you some questions around like Man City players earlier and things like that. I want to do the same, but outside of Man City. So currently playing, most overrated player, who comes to mind?
God. The first one is Rashford for me. Yeah, Marcus Rashford. I like what he represents. I like the fact that he's a Man United fan. He's a Man United local. He's been at the club all his life. So I like a lot of his ability on the ball as well. His pace is fantastic. He's got a great finish on him. He can beat a man. That's as far as it goes. You know, he's not a world-class generational player. And that's my issue. If you think he is, then that's my issue. If you think he's just a solid Premier League player for Man United, then fair enough. You know, yeah.
And blows are very hot and cold. And a lot of United fans would say, you know, he's not giving it his all. He's too powerful in the club. Things like that. Most underrated player?
Underrated player, that's hard. I still think Rodri's underrated.
People don't underestimate
how good he is. Controlling a football game is the hardest thing to do in the sport, in my opinion, at the highest level. Obviously, scoring goals is up there as well, but controlling a game purely, I do think Rodri is underestimated.
City's most important player, would you say?
Yeah, we won't win anything this season without him if he's injured, but he won't be, obviously, hopefully.
Most controversial football opinion, so something that you think that most other people seem to disagree with.
Oh, that's hard. Controversial football opinion. I think Kane's a little bit overrated. Mm. And that's off the back of seeing him in a Champions League semi-final. Didn't have a shot on target, I think. Certainly missed a big opportunity on his left foot. Yes, he sprays the ball around a lot, but he's always miles off the pace. When he has to spray that ball, he's always so deep. He's never able to stretch that back line and create opportunities and space in behind. So I still think Kane's got a lot to prove, which is unfortunate. I think he's mismanaged his career.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just where you are. Van Dijk doesn't leave Newcastle. He's not one of the best strikers in the history of the Premier League. I think he should have left when he was 25. Mm. Only 30. No.
He would have done well, surely, if he'd have got that City move, though.
Yeah, he would have won at least a league title, but trebles and stuff like that. When people say he would have done better than Haaland, I don't know about that.
Oh, you don't think so?
It's the butterfly effect. We don't know if he would have slowed someone else down, if he would have limited De Bruyne, if he would have limited, you know, Bernardo Silva. We don't know.
Dropping in and taking the space, maybe.
Yeah.
You got to feel sorry for Harry Kane now, though. I mean, he finally got that move to one of the few clubs in Europe where you feel like you can guarantee silverware, and he won't win anything this year with Bayern Munich.
Yeah, and I think football managing your career is as equally as important as how good you are on the pitch at the highest level. The wrong move at the wrong time, it can derail you for 4, 5, 6 years. I think Mbappe stayed at PSG far too long. I see a player that's plateaued. I see a player that hasn't kicked on, isn't able to influence the highest level games. He couldn't change it against Dortmund.
No.
He couldn't change it. It's Dortmund. Okay. The right back's not world class for Dortmund. He's nowhere near right back. World class, the right back. He skinned him a couple of times. He plateaued in the French league. He's been there for 7 years, isn't he? PSG, 6 years.
Mm.
Crazy amount of time.
Won a bunch of league guns, but
that means nothing. Honestly, they mean nothing. A few of them do, and being the highest score for PSG, Champions League final for PSG, their first Champions League final against Bayern Munich in the COVID era, then it ends, and you've got to leave,
yeah,
in my opinion.
A player that you've been wrong about, you either thought was great and turned out to be rubbish, or vice versa?
Oh, that's hard. I think I was probably wrong about Rodri, actually. When he first came in, I thought he was really limited.
He didn't have a good first season, did he?
He didn't. And he wasn't trusted in the Champions League final even. That was a year after. You know, he was at City for 2 years. Then he wasn't trusted in the Champions League final against Chelsea. Ilkay Gundogan has playing DM instead. So I probably was wrong about Rodri because I never saw him being as good as what he is now. No way.
Mentioning Rodri there, what comes to mind as well is Grealish, who didn't have a first good season, had a very good second season, won a treble. Things haven't gone as well this season. How are you feeling about Jack Grealish at the moment?
I think he's underestimated of how good he is. The best players have to... Damien Duff left Blackburn Rovers to join Chelsea. He was limited in how he played at Chelsea. So was Joe Cole. So was Thierry Henry at Barcelona with Pep Guardiola. If you want success, you have to limit yourself for the greater good. You know, Grealish could go to Spurs and be an unbelievable player, running past people.
Yeah.
He'd still win nothing. So I hope he stays because he's more than good enough to stay. And maybe he's got a role in midfield. That might be his future.
Okay, interesting. Predictions. Man City going to win the Premier League? Next few games, are going to get it done?
Yeah, if we can't beat Fulham and Spurs, then I don't deserve to be talking about winning the Premier League, do I? It's different if we're playing Arsenal and they got a good result against us at the Emirates at the start of the season and the 0-0 was decent. It wasn't as good as some fans were kind of celebrating a 0-0. If we can't beat Fulham and West Ham and Spurs, then you know, you have to back City, don't you?
Next season, I don't know if you've given that too much thought yet. How do you think that's going to go?
I think Arsenal will have a really strong platform. I think if City win four, look, you have to back Arteta's ability to re-galvanise us this side. They did it this season. They've been impeccable since the start of this year. If he can do it for this season, based on how bad it was last season, 247 days and they bottled the league title, then you've got to back them to do it next season. Jurrien Timber comes back. They get a striker. They've got a young side. They can kind of, when you're young, you can kind of forget the kind of trauma, I think, a little bit easier, maybe. So they got a fresh outlook. They go again next season. There's no way City win five in a row.
So you're probably worried about Arsenal next year?
I'd say Arsenal. Maybe Arne Slot could come in and galvanise Liverpool. I think Liverpool again. I think it's basically Arsenal.
Not City. Obviously, a lot of people are expecting, you know, like we saw post-Fergie or post-Wenger, a big drop-off with Liverpool. You think they might be dangerous?
Yeah, no, 100%. Not as dangerous as they would have been if they kept Klopp, and obviously he just wanted to leave for his own reasons. But I think Arsenal are the real threat next season.
Have you got any predictions, could be team, player, of something that you think is going to happen that seems obvious to you, but other people just can't really see? Maybe a player is going to do really well, who's underrated at the moment, or a team is going to come out of nowhere, or a team is going to fall apart?
God, that's difficult, yeah. I think Everton have got a good chance of getting into European football next season. I made a bold prediction about that. I've been slagged off on social media for it. But they've got the foundations, the likes of Doucouré, the likes of Pickford if he stays, Branthwaite if he stays. They've got a spine as good as almost anyone in that world in the Premier League. They've got a manager who's very, very good at setting them up defensively. If they can get a bit more out of Calvert-Lewin, they're not a million miles off. They're not a million miles off eighth next season.
Okay.
But people think they're going to get relegated next season. No way.
Yeah, assuming no points deductions again next
hopefully
season.
Hopefully that's over. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Hopefully that's just... I think you should start the season with the points deduction. I know it's easier said than done. It's a nine-month season, but I think these kind of... Will Nottingham Forest have an extra point here or there? While clubs are kind of looking at Forest to try and compete with them to get out of the relegation scrap like Luton, I think it's crazy.
So if they found that there was an issue and they were going to deduct points midway through the season, you think they should have waited to the start of next season?
I think so. And then you start with a clear slate. If that clear slate is minus 10, then that's a different debate. But mid-season, Luton don't know what they're aiming for. I think it's got sporting connotations.
What do you think is the future of like the football YouTube space and I suppose your plans in that world? Is it more of what's currently being done? Do you think there are big changes coming?
It's hard because, look, you're always going to have a 90-minute football match and that will always be fixed, the amount of time that football match takes. I think there'll be a lot more interest around what happens pre-match. I think football stadiums are more interested in trying to get you in 2 hours earlier, 3 hours earlier. So maybe coverage changes in that regard as well in terms of how long football fans engage with the product of football. Obviously, there's more games being played all the time. There's extra tournaments. The Super League might be coming in. The Club World Cup's expanded and stuff like that. So I think Apple are trying to create a new tournament or whatever or expand the Club World Cup with FIFA, which is a different debate for a different video. But I think therefore the football online space has got a massive role to kind of be a companion to where football's going in terms of its expansion.
Mm. There's been a few fears from people mentioning football games are too long, they're not exciting enough, it doesn't fit well with a newer generation that are used to consuming stuff on TikTok. Do you think there's any truth in that?
Yeah, it comes from my disdain for referees and VAR. I think that they're ruining the product. Right. I think we're in an era of average players. I really do. I think but football comes and goes. And you have players in the 70s that won Ballon d'Ors that you've never heard of. Then the next couple of years, you're hearing about the Seedorfs of the world or the Zidanes of the world. I think football ebbs and flows a little bit. And at the moment, we're in a bit of a low, in my opinion.
Because, in terms of the players?
In terms of what they bring to the sport. You know, we watched Messi for 10 years. He carried a ball at any angle. He could score 91 goals in a calendar year. He could win Champions Leagues with his form. At the moment, Erling Haaland probably is the best striker in the world in terms of success and ability. He hasn't scored in a Champions League final yet. He hasn't scored in a final yet for Man City. He's still a fantastic player. He's nowhere near Thierry Henry in terms of technical ability, or Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He's just not. Or R9. But he is the figurehead of this generation. So it suggests to me that the sport at the moment is in a bit of a low. And then eventually there'll be players that come along who infuse the sport with the kind of creativity that Lionel Messi did, for example.
I mean, do you think Guardiola's almost someone to blame for that? Because obviously he does something and then all the other teams copy. And is that because players are just trained to operate within a system now as opposed to having that flair and individual skill?
Yeah, I think it is. Ferguson used to play 4-4-2 and then he sees Mourinho play 4-5-1 essentially, 4-2-3-1. Then he does it. Or it's actually sometimes it was a 4-3-3 and the wingers dropped in and he played Tevez and Rooney off the sides and Ronaldo and all that. Yeah. So it's different. But he adopted three-man midfield, just like Essien and Ballack and Lampard at Mourinho's Chelsea. So all the best managers are copied. When Guardiola leaves, I think there'll be a bit of a flourishing for individuality again. Mm. That's what I think. But if you ask Bayern, there are some Bayern fans and Bundesliga fans that don't like what he did in Germany for how it influenced the national side. It made them a little bit more boring. I think you see that with Timo Werner, Kai Havertz. They are boring footballers. We can debate their effectiveness, but they're boring footballers, aren't they?
City sometimes get criticised for being boring. Do you think there's anything in that? There's just so much control. It's just the emphasis is put on the control, right? It's don't lose the ball.
Mm.
It's not as exciting, potentially.
As a City fan, it is exciting because you're seeing win after win, and that is, maybe you get a little bit used to it, and that's a different debate, you know. But yeah, I can see why it's boring for the neutral.
Yeah.
100%.
In comparison to other teams that are going to go for it and
cross
the ball early and not care about losing it, that sort of thing. Fab. Okay, well, Bobby, thank you very much for taking the time to come speak. Really appreciate it. Like I said, I'm a big fan of the club.
Thank you.
I saw you on the kickoff. I probably listened to every club podcast since you guys started.
Thank you very much.
If anyone watching this isn't familiar with it and wants some good football content, I'd recommend checking it out.
Cheers, mate. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.